Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents A Jump into the Unknown by Mikhail Atamanov. Translated by Andrew Schmidt. Narrated by Neil Heligers. Introduction, Part 1. Revocation of Titles. Palinthu, capital of the First Directory, Palace of the Ruling Council, Small Council Chamber. Princess, with all due respect, only members of the ruling council and invited speakers are allowed to enter the palace, said the watchful head of the palace guard, standing in the way of Minnow the Finn's luxurious levitating throne. As he spoke, the gray-haired guardsman got down on one knee to express his immeasurable respect for the ruler of the First Directory and his liege lady. But he was still unwilling to shirk his duty and allow ancient law to be violated. The dozen other armed soldiers guarding the entryway followed their commander's lead and also respectfully got down on one knee, yet maintained vigilance and kept hold of their weapons. The noble princess, looking unbelievably haughty and majestic in her traditional vestments, which were meant exclusively for members of her ancient ruling dynasty, Le Fin, opted not to get into a verbal skirmish with her subject. Instead, she just turned around in silence and looked to her companion, the young but already quite authoritative mage-diviner Macpeu Unroy. The respected sorcerer impatiently pushed aside a muscle-bound middle-aged man who was loaded down with boxes and parcels and wearing the gray smock of a rightless non-mage, then unhappily shoved a short servant girl standing behind the flying throne and stepped out in front. Uilu Otosh, Commander of the Guard. I am Mage Ruler Macpeu Unroy, Chief Advisor to the Lathin Dynasty. I will also be giving a speech at the Council of Mage Rulers today. The head of the palace guard stood up and gave another bow of respect, though it lacked the piety he reserved for his liege lady. Mage Ruler Macpeu Unroy, I know you well and am prepared to let you enter. But who are the other people in your group? The tip of the wand in the guardsman's hand, sparkling with electricity, pointed at the miniature servant girl and heavily laden muscle man. I have been given a description of the ruler of the First Directory, co-ruler Nat Le Fin, and neither of your companions seem to match. I don't know them, so I cannot allow them to enter. Macpeu opened his mouth to answer, but kept silent as not to tell a blatant lie. A tense pause took hold. Then Princess Minnow Le Fin spoke up for the first time, and her tinkling metal voice carried so much confidence and majesty that anyone would concede that it belonged to a natural-born ruler.
My husband, co-ruler Nat Le Fin, was unable to attend the council. You see, he lives in the world where magic is atrophied, and traveling here would take far too much time. Unfortunately for us, time was something co-ruler of humanity Archmage Onuri Untalavares did not deign to provide us when he announced this urgent session of the Mage Council. So I will be speaking in the name of the ancient Le Fin dynasty of Mage Rulers. These two non-mages are my servants, and they will be accompanying me.
The lead guard bowed respectfully to the regal lady, but still did not make way. Young mage Macpeu Unroy had to come up closer to the commander and explain, lowering his voice to a whisper, so the common palace guardsman wouldn't overhear.
Commander Uilu Otosh, you must be aware that Princess Minnow Le Fin was severely wounded in the terror attack at the funeral of her grandfather, Thumor Anhu Le Fin. My lady lost her legs and is not able to move on her own or take care of her most basic day-to-day necessities. So the princess's servants are absolutely indispensable. As it is, we strove to minimize the size of our group as much as possible to reduce friction with the Council of Rulers. We did not even take any mages, despite the fact that, as ruler of the First Directory, she is entitled to a magnificent retinue containing many mages of all kinds.
The guard commander furrowed his brow and started to think. This really was more complicated than it looked. Outsiders were categorically forbidden from entering the palace, However, without those servants, it was doubtful the council session would take place at all. After all, great Archmage co-ruler Anuri Untalavares wasn't going to be personally carrying the crippled princess and setting her on the podium, and he certainly wouldn't be readjusting her dress or carrying her out to the toilet. And that was what made up the commander's mind.
Okay, then. The servants may enter. But first, I must search them to make sure there are no dangerous items concealed in their clothing. I'll also need to give the throne a thorough inspection. And as for you, Honorable MacPeo Unroy, I humbly request that you leave your magic wand at the entrance. Regrettable as it may be, rules are rules.
The princess gave a silent nod, consenting to the search of her retinue. And they were very thorough, but nothing suspicious was found. The burly pack mule was carrying only a holographic screen generator, a completely standard model like anyone might use to provide visual aid to a speech. The servant girl was wearing no jewelry and didn't even have pockets in her clothing, so she also made it through the inspection unimpeded. A few minutes later, the princess's retinue was back on its way and, after walking into the main hall of the palace, turned a corner into a room where those about to speak in the small council chamber could get some rest or tidy themselves up. Just after the doors closed behind them, the mage diviner gave a happy chuckle.
"See, Princess Minnow, I told you it wouldn't be too hard to sneak Roman Pavlovich and Tamara into the palace."
When he saw fear on the ruler's face, MacPeo hurried to add,
"Don't be afraid. We can speak openly here. The palace was checked thoroughly this morning, and no microphones, spy cameras, or other foreign objects were found. The only room the guard did not check, as per tradition, was the council chamber itself."
Up on the levitating throne, Minnow adjusted the uncomfortable high collar of her dress and sat back wearily in her chair.
"Although I have never entered this palace before, I am perfectly familiar with the way things work here. Ever since an order from my great-grandfather, co-ruler of humanity, Archmage Yuho Luro Lafin, more than 200 years ago, both the large and small council chambers have been off-limits to anyone except members of the ruling council and invited speakers."
"And yet we both also know that is not exactly the whole truth, Princess," the mage diviner said with a smirk and wily chuckle. "An exception is made for one lone cleaning woman who regularly tidies up all over the palace. In her 40 years of impeccable service, she has earned the complete trust of the guard. But that cleaning woman just so happens to hail from the First Directory and be a faithful subject of yours. So she got everything ready yesterday."
Princess Minnow took a heavy sigh. The young ruler was extremely displeased with all this. It was a great shame, but there was no other way to stay in power. They would have to spook the ruling council a bit and put the fear of God into them. The talented mage seer had studied all possible lines of the future a day prior and warned the princess that her enemies from the other magical dynasties were in quite a decisive mood. According to him, it was inevitable that Minnow Lafin would suffer at least attempted mental attacks during the council session, and it was just as inevitable that the council would end with a vote to demand she be stripped of her title as head of the Lafin faction in the game, and that co-ruler Nat Lafin be deposed as ruler of the First Directory in the real world. Now, the princess had no fear of mental attacks. The servant girl in her retinue was actually a paladin from the other world by the name of Tamara, with a unique aptitude for blocking magic. And Minnow was not particularly worried about the outcome of the vote of non-confidence because the Lafin faction, which she led, had put up impressive results in the game that bends reality. According to reports from humanity's Gecko suzerains, the Lafin faction was currently the most advanced and powerful faction not only from the Majorcratic world, but of all the factions on the virtual Earth as a whole. To her eye, the report she was about to give detailing her faction's success and the strides it had made toward providing the defense of the world as a whole were sure to have a positive impact on the members of the ruling council, and thus a favorable outcome was preordained. But nevertheless, the princess was feeling jittery,
So she agreed to her advisor's plan B just in case the threat of impeachment became too real.
I'd have never agreed to such a thing if not for your prediction that they might request that I step down or strip me of all my titles. But you are correct, advisor. If we cannot come to an agreement the nice way, we'll have to try being mean. But for now, I am not so much worried about the mages of competing dynasties. If your words are to be trusted, we will overcome them all in the end. But my husband will be outraged when he finds out what happened. Laying Nat LaFin loves me, values me, and would never have released me into a hornet's nest without all the relevant information. But if they do try something, I truly pity them. Nat never forgives attacks against him, and it would be hard to look at a threat of impeachment any other way. If they did that, it could lead to a huge war, and I feel sorry for the sorcerers who dare stand in my husband's path.
Mac Peu Un Roy didn't answer. He had spent over an hour checking over all the most probable lines of the future, and seeing all kinds of different endings to today's session of the ruling council, and that included outcomes the princess was better off not knowing.
14 hexagons, one at level 5 and 2 at 4. An advanced high-speed road network. Vast northern and northwestern territories for future expansion, which have already been partially cleared of aggressive NPCs. The hexagons that directly border the Gecko spaceport are also very nearby and primed for capture. Very soon, the LaFin faction may have total control over overland transport of extraterrestrial goods and all trade with the suzerains.
The mage rulers in the council chamber began to buzz, but it was more dismay than approval. It was very strange. Princess Minnow was speaking at such a high level for the first time, but that didn't exactly make her a novice in rhetoric. Since childhood, as an heiress to an ancient ruling dynasty, she had been trained in many skills that might be relevant to a princess, including the art of public speaking. All the princess's tutors remarked that she had an implicit talent for rhetoric. Minnow could win over even the most venerable opponents, subdue any audience to her will, and force them to empathize with whatever she was saying. For that very reason, co-ruler of humanity Thumor Anhu LaFin often sent his capable and intelligent great-granddaughter to represent the First Directory and LaFin Dynasty at all kinds of events, and Minnow always performed admirably. Because the princess had rich experience with public speaking, she figured she could predict the audience's reactions in advance. She was currently reporting on the striking successes and military victories of the LaFin faction, so she imagined that the Council of Rulers was going to react, if not with elation, then at the very least with approval. After all, if one of the key factions of the majorcratic world was doing well, that was good for all of them. However, the audience was behaving unexpectedly. Everything was strange today. She couldn't wrap her mind around it. The princess was basically saying the right things, backing it all up with facts, diagrams, and illustrative images. She took pauses of the perfect length in all the right places, expertly played with her volume and pacing, but still she wasn't sensing the proper reaction from the crowd. It was as if the mage rulers weren't listening to her. And when they did react, it was generally negative. That had her upset and on guard. But nevertheless, Minnow continued her speech.
As of the present day, the LaFin faction comprises 7,300 players, and recently our population has been growing at an exponential pace. In fact, we will be surpassing the 10,000 player mark within the next 7 or 8 days. As soon as that happens, our capital hexagon will advance to level 6, which will allow us to bring a total of 14,100 players into the game. As far as I know, none of the other factions of the virtual planet have come even close to boasting of such success.
With a remote control, she flipped the huge screen to her next slide, depicting the construction of a grand freight port in the tropics, a hexagon recently captured from the Human 3 faction and officially transferred to the LaFin faction in a recent peace treaty. The plan was for a port with a plethora of docks, which was to serve as the main logistics hub on the eastern shore of the bay for 4 factions, LaFin, Relict, Human 3, and Human 6,
and it would provide good, stable income, commensurate with the profits from trade with the Gecko spaceport. What was more, a planetary shield generator was being erected on the nearby rocky island, and it was going to require truly colossal quantities of material of all different kinds. Most of that was planned to be delivered by sea, so the large port would be necessary for the survival of humanity as a whole. Nevertheless, as soon as she began speaking about the construction of the port, co-ruler of humanity Honori Untalavares abruptly stood up, cutting the princess off mid-word. The most powerful archmage of modern times and her greatest opponent. In his day, he had done quite a lot to make co-ruler Thumar Anhulafin's life miserable. The fearsome sorcerer, wearing a black robe with gold embroidery, hammered his magic staff into the floor with every step he took toward the podium. With the sound of his last knock still reverberating off the walls, he stopped a few steps from Minnow.
"Did I hear you right?" co-ruler Honori Unta asked, his voice powerful and booming, fully belaying the old man's respectable 150 years. "Girl, do you really have the gall to stand there and claim your faction is doing well? In point of fact, you are making a real mess of things. Perhaps your young years make it hard to comprehend, so allow me to explain. Every player in your faction with magical abilities will flee at the first possible opportunity. So how can there be any talk of development and increasing your faction's numbers if your faction has no players capable of occupying key leadership positions? Or are you under the impression that non-mages can occupy these posts?"
The ghoulish old man fell silent, awaiting the princess's imminent response. When co-ruler Honori Unta finished, the room burst into a storm of applause. By all appearances, the vast majority of the audience supported the archmage's point of view. The princess winced in pain. Not once over the course of her speech today had the room supported her, even with the most tepid golf clap. But here her opponent's opening salvo was met with unmitigated delight. Bad, very bad. Just then, her advisor Makpeu Unroy's voice rang out in her head.
"Careful, Minnow. They're all expecting you to slip up. Be extra delicate formulating your response."
But the princess already knew that perfectly well. In the majorcratic world, there was an ancient law that had served as a bedrock principle for millennia, which read, "Common rabble, ignorant of the art of charms, may never be equal to the wizard in kind." To rephrase the archaic piece of legislation in more modern terms, people without magical abilities were not allowed to hold upper leadership posts, which were traditionally reserved for mages. However, the population of Earth had grown since that law was written, and the majority of humans were born with no magical abilities. At present, out of a total population of 11 billion, there were less than 45,000 mages. And that meant for every child born with a predilection for the art of charms, 250,000 newborns entered the common rabble. And thus, more and more exceptions were found to the ancient law all the time. It was not just possible for every city, large enterprise, and scientific laboratory to be headed by a person with a talent for magic. And the apotheosis of these exceptions was the rise of General Uitaka, who had taken the second directory by force and proclaimed himself king. The rulers of the remaining 30 directories could huff and puff all they liked, making reference to their wizarding majesty and simply ignore the upstart ruler, but that did nothing about the fact that they were in no condition to stop or impede the highly successful general. But mentioning those exceptions here, in the palace of the mage rulers, the very heart of the magically imbued world, would be a huge mistake. Minnow understood that perfectly, so she said what she thought the audience most wanted to hear.
"Co-ruler Honori Untalavares may well be under the impression that I must be speaking out against the order of our world, because my magical abilities were discovered so late in life. Well, I'm afraid I have to disappoint him. In fact, I am heiress to the ancient Lathin dynasty of mage rulers, so you're unlikely to find a person more zealously devoted to upholding historical law and tradition as I.
All posts and professions which are legally prescribed for those with magical abilities will go to mages, and that is that. And the fact that a number of traitors will flee my faction, six of whom are here in this room, Minnow said, directing her laser pointer at a group of people squirming awkwardly in mage robes sitting with the fourth directory rulers, has no effect on our eventual success. In fact, when the rats flee a ship, its crew is usually inclined to celebrate. Furthermore, the first directory has sufficiently magically gifted citizens to replace these dissidents.
For the first time since she began her speech, there was some applause, though it was fairly tepid, and fell silent as soon as co-ruler Onuri Untalavares turned to the chamber with a frown of dismay.
Let's say you're telling the truth. Although I still cannot see where you will get enough mages for your faction, but regardless. The main issue today is something else. Recent events have proven that the Lefin faction supports our opponents from the alternative world, and that its soldiers fight side by side with enemies of the Majorcratic world. And that I simply cannot abide. It is obvious that only one of the worlds can remain at the end of the game's tongue of safety, and it will be whichever one has a greater number of game hexagons. So we must all work together to make absolutely sure that our world is the one that survives. And to that end, there can be absolutely no ruling for the enemy and threatening our very future. So for that reason, I demand the ruling council conduct a vote of non-confidence in the head of the First Directory, co-ruler Nat Lefin, and his Wayetta, head of the Lefin faction Gerd Minnow Lefin. They must be disposed for collusion with the enemy.
Introduction Part 2. Consequences. By the end of his speech, Archmage Onuri Untalavares was essentially screaming, adding fuel to the fire of indignance, and trying to impress upon his opponent with the gravity of his accusation. The chamber was also buzzing in support of the old archmage, which kept the princess from responding for quite a while.
"They're going to need a bit of a push," the voice of Mac Peo sounded in Minnow's head again. "We didn't want it to come to this, but our opponents have left us with no choice. Smear them. Use the arguments we prepared yesterday to counter that very accusation."
Minnow Lefin waited patiently for the din to settle, then started to answer with a mocking smile.
"How deplorable it is to see that advanced age has robbed one of the three co-rulers of humanity of his clarity of mind. And it's doubly vexing that a mage who was once so great squandered the statistic points the game bestowed upon him in a belated attempt to increase muscle mass and paper over childhood insecurities rather than improving his intelligence."
"Come now, pitiable Wayetta of a space pirate, see that you don't overstep your bounds,"
shouted the insulted Archmage Onuri Untalavares, trying to talk Minnow Lefin back from the brink. But she was no longer listening to him, turning up her microphone and continuing.
"Well, if my opponent had ever deigned to improve his intelligence, he might be able to take a more critical look at his own words, instead of telling a blatant lie to the Council of Mage Rulers. And meanwhile, an elementary logical counterexample can break down all of the co-rulers' arguments. It is easily possible that the dominant faction on the planet could be one containing players from both worlds. And if Lang Onuri Untalavares had ever even once improved his intelligence, he may have come to this thought on his own and realized his idea that one world is sure to be destroyed is nothing more than empty conjecture."
Princess Minnow took a brief pause and, noting with satisfaction that the rulers were finally listening closely and even discussing what she had to say, continued.
"So then, let me direct the Honorable Mage's attention to the fact that even humanity's wise Gecko suzerains do not yet know what will happen to two split worlds after the Tongue of Safety runs out. Insufficient data, they say. And I am now stating the official position of the Viceroy of Earth, Kasta Daiksh. Refuting it would not merely make you look foolish, but also subject all humanity to harsh reprisals for disrespecting our suzerains. The Malayathacian Horde does not know what will happen to a double world with bifurcated space either, even though they have been exploring the game that bends reality for over 3,000 years. The Union of Myelonian Prides also does not know, even though my husband, co-ruler of humanity, Natlathin, has spoken on the subject with the wisest and most authoritative rulers of the Myelonian race. And so, co-ruler Anuri Untalavares cannot possibly say that with such certainty after being in the game for all of 5 minutes. He does not even know the basics, and yet he insists upon making a laughingstock of himself by spouting far-reaching categorical prognoses.
Minnow, what have you done? You should have stuck to the facts without pejorative comments about the age and mental capacity of co-ruler Anuri Unta. You made the head of the Lavares faction look like a liar and damaged his authority before his subjects in the most serious fashion. The Archmage will never forgive that. You have just cut off almost all positive lines of the future.
The mage rulers in the chamber started buzzing in dismay and even stomped their feet, because it was hard to take the princess's words as anything other than a direct insult toward one of the three respected co-rulers of humanity. Minnow herself also understood that she had crossed a line and overplayed her hand, dashing the audience's budding sympathy. But she wasn't the least bit sorry for what she'd done. Archmage Anuri Untalavares opened and closed his mouth a few times, preparing to respond to the accusations of incompetence and lying. But in the end, he waved a hand and plopped down dismally into his seat with the look of a beaten dog. It was some time before the clamor quieted back down, and only because the other co-ruler, Archmage Henri Huvilashin, stood up and called for silence. After that, he turned to Minnow and shook his head in reproach.
"Such harsh words are not befitting of a high-born princess. I believe, as a representative of the ancient and glorious Lefin dynasty, you should be ashamed of such intemperance. But most importantly, Magus Minnow, you did not respond to the allegations that you are working for the enemy, and those are truly grave allegations which threaten the most severe consequences for the leaders of the Lefin dynasty, who have now completely lost the trust of the ruling council."
Minnow clenched her teeth until they cracked, trying to restrain herself this time, while also not revealing her disappointment and despair. Before today's council session, she was hoping for co-ruler Henri Huvilashin to at least take a neutral position, because he was always considered a friend of her family. The fact that the second co-ruler of humanity supported the allegations came as a heavy blow.
"I was simply not allowed to finish, respected co-ruler Henri Huvilashin, so I was not able to give an explanation. And as for the harsh words, it's hard to maintain calm with co-ruler Anuri Untalavares and his vassals constantly trying to mentally attack me and break my train of thought. What's more, I was not the one who started throwing around insults such as inexperienced girl and pitiable Wayetta of a space pirate. By the way, the fact you called me a Wayetta means your information is out of date. Co-ruler Natlathin raised my status yesterday from Wayetta to senior wife."
"I confirm,"
Mage Diviner MacPeo Unroy took a step toward the podium.
"The ruler of the First Directory, co-ruler Natlathin, declared Princess Minnow his senior wife yesterday and left her in charge of the Lefin faction on her personal request. Someone with decision-making authority must always be present to maintain contact with neighbors, expand faction borders, and manage our grand building projects. And that is why Lang Nat embarked upon a space flight and left his wife Minnow Lefin at home."
The news made the mage ruler start buzzing again, because it seriously changed the speaker's status and impacted the political landscape of the whole world. One lone shout rose up from the chamber.
"Princess Minnow, do you care to comment on why co-ruler Nat waited until now to do that? Was it out of desire to secure the property of the Lefin dynasty before this meeting? After all,
After a directory leader is deposed, his senior wife may lay claim to a portion of the dynasty's property, unlike a traveling wife.
Minho turned to see who that was and smiled with the very corners of her lips.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?